So already the third night of our training period are coming and going sesshin. And already, of course, deeply into it. We are right in the middle, as we always are, right in the middle of our life. This mysterious life that keeps coming, giving us one thing and then the next. And so we gather here to investigate this great matter of life and death. And over this coming and going sesshin, we're using the text, the book of collected talks of Shunryu Suzuki, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And this morning, Melissa spoke about the talk he gave on posture, the first one in the book, and I was talking to one of you who said, yeah, I've read the book many times, and I always skip over that one. yeah, I know the posture, but of course, when we investigate any part of the matter, it reveals the whole, and so Shunryu Suzuki is not talking about posture, about these forms as something separate, but seeing that just taking this upright and dignified posture is our life itself. We don't do this in order to get somewhere else, but this posture is an expression of our life. And though we sit in a similar manner, each one of us expressing our individuality, each one of us being ourself, manifesting ourself. And as I read this talk, I was caught quite early on. And he's talking about the posture and how with our hands and our legs there's a crossing over, and the right becomes the left, and the left is the right. And he says, this Zazen posture expresses the oneness of duality, not two and not one. This is the most important teaching, not two, not one. This teaching, not two, not one, what could it possibly mean, and what could it have to do with our lives? But I think it is one of the main teachings of our Zen way, which is that there is some life that is beyond our ideas. These words we use and the concepts we use, such a wonderful and marvelous thing we human beings have developed. And yet too often we begin to think that the story we are telling is our life. The story we are telling about the moment as it is happening. We are storytelling creatures, and our stories can be very powerful and very important. And, of course, Buddhism itself is a story. Zen is just a good story. And so maybe this is just the bedtime story, talking about something beyond the story. In our daily way of thinking, something is one or it's two. Something is light or it is dark. Strong or weak. Many ways that we separate the world. Many useful ways. we talk about delusion and enlightenment. But this teaching of not one and not two says that there is not some fixed position we can come to. There are some spiritual paths that point to oneness. And when you reach oneness with God, with the universe, then the mission is accomplished. We just spend our days in blissful union with the gods, and I'm looking for that path, if anyone can tell me where to find that, because I find for a time, of course, matters become clear, or moments of tenderness and intimacy arise. Just tasting the delicious soup we had for dinner. What more could anyone need? Sitting with good friends, eating delicious food. But then it's over and I'm tired and my knees hurt and I have to give a Dharma talk and everything resumes. But this is the Buddha's teaching that everything is impermanent. We call this the coming and going retreat. Our life is coming and going. Everyone in our life comes and goes. Such a tender and precious thing, this coming and going. And we might wish it were otherwise, but Melissa reminded us this morning, talking about a story where some entity lives forever. That would be a real problem. This life, this human life, is life and death. Not one as opposed to the other. Life is defined by death, and death is defined by life. And moment after moment, we are participating in this life and death. Everything flashing into being, appearing, abiding for some brief or longer length of time, and then disappearing. And so in Zen, our goal is not to see through the separateness. This is something we are encouraged to begin to see, that these ideas we have of me and you and here and there, when we look deeply into our experience, it begins to be hard to tell the difference. Of course, a useful distinction, this me and you, but when we look into the experience of life, we can perhaps notice that everything is here. We say the cars are on the street, and we are in the meditation hall. But where is the sound of the car? Is it outside? Is it inside? And the idea of the car. Where is the car? This beginner's mind, this vast original mind, we say contains the whole universe. Each one of us living in the universal experience of ourself, our true self that includes everything we encounter. Everyone we encounter is ourself. And so we can catch glimpses of this where we close the gap between subject and object, and there is just this moment, just the sense of this room. Just breathing, not sure sometimes who is breathing whom. But in Zen, we say to encounter the absolute is not yet awakening. When we encounter this, when we see through this delusion of two, the delusion of many, into the reality of oneness, we are encouraged to go beyond becoming attached or falling into this oneness, to see that this oneness is also appears as the many things. Each particular thing is separate and independent. One great Zen teacher, Uchiyama Roshi, is famous for saying that you cannot exchange even one fart with another human being. He goes on to say traditionally there are three kinds of farts. They're different sounds, but I can't remember exactly what they are. But there are deep teachings that we'll get to later in the retreat. we cannot exchange our life or our experience. There is some quality of this. And within this experience, it is not just one, but the world appears in the particular. So it is why leave our seat, when we leave the meditation hall for the evening, we straighten our cushions and we take care of this building that we live in. And we treat the world around us with reverence, because this particularness, the many appearances of life, this infinite life that is infinitely flexible and infinitely willing to appear now as the garbage that needs to be taken out, now as the flowers on the altar. So if you say it's all one, you miss the beauty of each thing, the beauty of the 10,000 mountains. And if you say it is two, you miss the fact that from the very beginning there has only been this one life. Know where to come down, no way to comprehend this except to live into it, to look closely not at the words or the concepts, but to come again and again to the truth of your experience, the truth of the arising and passing away of thoughts and emotions and sensations. And to vow to find out for yourself, to live your one true life, to find a place to be in this world of not two and not one, this world of one and two. Form and emptiness, light and dark, the particular and the absolute, in perfect harmony, like a lid fitting on the box. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably, and we'll take a few moments. And this is the time for questions about my talk, questions about practice, or observations about what's arising for you.
Very slippery kind of talk.
you noticed.
Say more about Slippery.
I guess I tried to make relevance where you were going with things, and it was just very difficult to do. It was difficult to get a real feeling of it. Mm. Thank you.
And you can feel the mind wanting to, all right, well, he's going to say something here soon, right? And the mind trying to, you know, waiting to pounce.
Mm. He wouldn't even tell us what the three kinds of farts were. What's up with that? But when we talk about something like this, and Suzuki is very slippery, and Dogen is very slippery, this not one, not two. I love that you said thank you, Dan. Because the mind wants very, very particular, defined things.
Yeah. Great. Christine.
So in this moment, listening to it, I relax. Because it gave me permission not to try so hard anymore. Like, because I'm not going to get it anyway. I mean, that's my MO, you know, it's just like the power driver.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I've changed a lot, but it really can come up. So I felt this just kind of like, oh, that's really good news.
That's great. Yeah, wonderful. Thank you.
So, this talk, I almost feel like it almost feels like it could allude to some sort of Schrodinger's cat paradox. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, sort of the cat's alive and dead simultaneously.
Right.
It's interesting quantum physics. It does feel like a quantum physics lesson in a way. But it's funny, it's like when you're talking, I'm using my mind. Sometimes it does want to wander and like plan about things and get out of the present moment while you're talking about staying with it. It's just funny.
Yeah, it is what the mind does, doesn't it? Go off. And there is something here. Actually, Shunryu Suzuki goes on to say, we die and we do not die. And he doesn't talk about the cat. But we do have, and of course science, if we go deeply into science, things are not as they appear to be in time and space, and things that seem so solid. There are many ways and disciplines when we look more deeply into things. It does disturb the mind because it doesn't fit in that way. So wonderful to be disturbed. Huh?
And just to say that Zen is very much about before you open the box, right? That world of emptiness where everything is possible. And this is what Shunryu Suzuki is talking about too. In the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. Once you open the box, become the expert cat, right? Alive, dead. So that's the world of form, and those two things keep interacting with each other, emptiness and form, and we tend to go for form. So to be able to live with an unopened box, that's what's different here. And it's kind of exciting and challenging and upsetting.
Susan?
The front foot and the back foot and walking was one of the first Zen concepts or metaphors that I saw, and it has always struck me as very apt and very telling, because the 2 feet are 2 things, but walking is 1 thing, and you put the 2 feet together moving, and that's 1 thing that requires 2 things to do it. Over time, that has kind of expanded in my mind to the idea that sometimes things that are hard for me to comprehend are maybe better understood as actions or processes than as things.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the invitation in our practice, not to get stuck in the thing quality of me and you and it and that, but there is in the activity, there's not a problem in walking.
No.
Right? But if you had to describe it or teach someone how to do it just through words, one foot, left foot, right foot, but no problem in the activity.
It's kind of I remember reading in the Beginner's Mind book about karmic thinking, which is kind of like almost like the when you open the box and you see the cat, it's kind of all the cat, you know, everything of the universe kind of leading to that cat state, and what we're looking to do is kind of be in a more empty state where we see the everything, you know. And that's really difficult. Like, that's really, obviously, it's really, really something I struggle with in Zen is just nothingness. So it's like, it is and it isn't. And, you know, it's here and it's not there. And that kind of dichotomy or dualism, it's the nothingness part that gets me the most. It's kind of like, oh, it's right there, but, you know. So,
well, and it's the opposite of concrete thinking, which is what you're so good at in your job. And nothingness probably isn't a good way to talk about it. Even emptiness is a bad translation of shunyata, which really means everything. It's that infinite possibility. You know, that's why the Schrodinger's cat is a good example, because we don't know. It's not knowing. Yeah, it's before it gets nailed down.
Well, okay, so maybe I'm misreading the book, because I think...
Probably not.
Yeah, because Senryu Suzuki talks about emptiness and tries to and says, okay, you know, emptiness is everything. Mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. But then he talks about emptiness as emptiness. Mm-hmm. And then he confuses me with the whole, the dualism and all that part, the slippery slope there.
Well, and there was something else in what you said, Mark, that I think is more important towards the beginning, that I don't know, I can't do this, I don't know how to do something like that.
Right.
Well, yeah. in this chapter, specifically, he says all this wild stuff, and then he says, sit up straight. So we do what we can do. We can sit up straight. We can sit with full presence. But we can't make ourselves understand shunyata. It's just not in our wheelhouse. No human being can do that, because it'll send your mind spinning endlessly. But in that upright sitting, there is the possibility for touching something that we always have known was here, but we missed because we were trying to figure it out or make it happen. So it is something of an allowing reality to unfold itself. It's just going to do that anyway. We're not going to do it. But to set up the conditions to perceive it. That's all we get to do. You know, and that's why we keep saying, don't move. Sit up straight. Follow the guidelines of this. You know, all that stuff. It's partly to hold us so that we have this amazing opportunity to witness another way of being, a bigger way of being present with reality. Not that narrowing that we've been growing up in all our lives. So, with that, we'll get to do it. Just for a moment. Come back to Sam.